This week's Seder begins with Vayakel. Moshe gathered together the entire community of the children of Israel. So, what is the expression of Vayakel? The Chazal, the Medrash, tells us that the idea of Vayakel, that the making of the Mishkan was a forgiveness for the chet of the Egel. That means it had to do, the people making the Mishkan now had a kapora, a forgiveness for the chet of the Egel, for the sin of the golden calf. Now, by the sin of the golden calf, it uses the expression Vayakel ho'om al Aaron, that the people gathered together against Aaron. So therefore, to find the kapora, forgiveness for that, it emphasizes here the expression Vayakel Moshe. Moshe gathered them together. It says, Eila hadvorim, these are the things. And then also it says, Zeh hadavor. Well, that relates to the same way as a forgiveness for the Egel. By the Egel, it said, Eile Elehecha Yisrael, Eile. So here it says, Eile hadvorim. That's why some say keeping Shabbos itself is also a kapora related. The kapora has in it a benefit of exoneration and cleansing yourself from the chet of the Egel, because Shabbos attests to the fact God created the world, and the Egel was a denial of God. So the Eile is related to the Eile. And also the word Zeh HaDavor, this is what God said. There it said, Ki Zeh Moshe Ho'ish. It also used the term Zeh. So the three terms that are used by the Egel are here used by the Mishkan to emphasize that the Mishkan was a forgiveness for the Egel. Now, this one point that the Mishkan, forgiveness for the Egel, we have to speak a moment on that. Because when did the commandment of the Mishkan take place? Now, if we follow the order of the chapters, it would seem we first studied Truma Tetzaveh, which was the commandment for the Mishkan and for the Aveda, for the worship and the ritual of service of Aaron. Then we had Kisisa last week, which deals with the Egel. Now we're reading Vayakel Pikudei, again, construction of the Mishkan. So if you took it in order, it would seem that first God told Moshe when he was in heaven the first period of time, when he communicated that you should make a Mishkan. And then the Egel took place. And now, after he was forgiven, Vayakel Moshe, it says it was the day after Yom Kippur. After he was forgiven from the chet of the Egel, they are now proceeding to follow through on the original commandment of the Mishkan. That's one way to learn it. Rashi learns, others learn differently. They said that really the chapter of Truma Tetzaveh was taken out of order. It really, because we have that general principle, Ein Mukdam U'Mukhar B'Torah, and really before that, if there would not have been an Egel, we discussed last week the symbolism of it, there would not have been necessary to have the Mishkan. The whole idea of the Mishkan was because of the Egel. So now, if we want to take both of these thoughts into this point, that the Mishkan was a kapora, was a forgiveness, we would say, sure, if they wouldn't have had a Mishkan before, and now they had a Mishkan, so obviously the Mishkan serves to be a kapora for the Egel. But if there was going to be a Mishkan anyway, so you would say, why is the Mishkan a forgiveness for the Egel? Then we're going to have a Mishkan anyway. The answer is, according to those opinions, you would say that the Mishkan could still be a forgiveness for the Egel. Not that the institution of the Mishkan is related to the Egel, but the way the people gave with their own initiative, with the depth of their soul, it gave them an opportunity to cleanse themselves and to participate and to exonerate themselves because of the nedavah that they gave, because they gave nediv libon. Here they were supposed to give from the depth of their spirit. And in fact, that's the emphasis on the depth of their spirit, because the main thing of kapora, of forgiveness, which we achieve from the Mishkan, is not just the ritual of the Mishkan. As Hirsch points out in the beginning here, the proof is that the greatest chet that the children of Israel had was the chet of the Egel. And they were forgiven. The greater degree, God rescinded his earlier decree through the petition of Moshe. They were forgiven. They were able to achieve such forgiveness without a Mishkan. The Mishkan, true, is to bring karbonis, to receive kapora for your chet. But you see from the sequence of events, he says, Above all, let me quote, it is of important significance to consider that this experience, which preceded the building of the first temple, occurred that the very greatest national crime was committed, and the highest grace of God was regained without temple and without offering. So he says, if the truth that temple and offering do not in themselves bring about the grace of God, but are only to be means of showing the way to gain the grace of God, if this proof requires any proof, it lies in the most striking manner in the whole history, which is deeply interwoven in this experience which preceded the first building of the temple. That means that was really a lesson from the Egel. The Egel happening the way it had was a tremendous lesson that the idea of Kapora is not necessarily involved in the temple. The temple may help a person, just like you have a shul. I mean, the shul, the fact that people get together Berov Am, should, or was meant to help a person achieve a certain spiritual feeling, we'll say, an elevation that it's difficult for one to achieve by himself. But it's not the ritual, it's not the mechanics, it's actually the result that comes about from that place. This is one or two of the thoughts that we find here. Now, sentence 3 says, Le'sevaru eish b'chol moshvaseichem b'yom ha-Shabbos, to tell you that that's also considered to be forbidden. Why? Because without fire, really, you can't create anything, as Hirsch explains it. The idea of fire gives the person the ability to master over matter and everything else. That means with fire, he can create tools. With fire, he is able to burn materials in order to construct. So fire is a category of itself. Although it may be destructive, but in the overall view, fire is something which does have its positive aspect. Now, another interpretation is, if that's the case, then why did we single it out? We understand that that would be considered as part of the malacha, and it would be a violation. So it says, no, it came out just as an example, to tell you lechalek yotzeh. That means to tell us about all other transgressions of the Shabbos. We know that Shabbos, if you violate intentionally, you're chayiv misa. That means if two people warn you and you go ahead and you still violate it, it's a cardinal offense. But we also know that by Shabbos, you have to bring a sacrifice, a korban chatos, if b'shogeg, unwillingly or unwittingly, you go ahead and you may forget that it's Shabbos, or you forgot that you're not allowed to do this. That is called a shogeg. The punishment for that is, in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, you have to bring a korban chatos, a sacrifice. And that brings about a forgiveness, a kapora. Now, there's a big difference from a shogeg. For example, if you happen to walk by the wall and somebody pushes you and you hit the switch and the light goes on, that's not called a shogeg. That is called an ones. An ones, you don't have any sin. In a sense, you don't have to bring any sacrifice. There's no forgiveness necessary because you didn't do it. You were pushed against it. You weren't even aware of it. Shogeg means you did it. But you did it. Yes, I did it, but I forgot today was Shabbos. I thought it was Sunday. Or I did it because I wasn't aware that you're not allowed to do it. In that instance, you have to bring a sacrifice. Why? And self-understood, because ignorance of the law, you weren't aware, that's your problem. You should have studied. You forgot it's Shabbos, don't be so absent-minded. But the idea is you did a malach, and the fact that your body did something, you have to bring a sacrifice. Of course, it's not intentional, there's no cardinal offense, there was no warning, obviously. Because if you have a warning, like the Talmud tells us, the whole idea of the warning is to differentiate between a shogeg, an inadvertent act, and a mazid as an intentional act. And that's why the warning has to be just immediately before the violation of the act. And not only immediately before, but the Talmud tells us that even the Talmud Chochem, the halacha remains, even the Talmud Chochem needs a warning before you consider it to be an act in which he is responsible and culpable as an intentional act. And there's a very interesting, if I could deviate for a moment, halachic exposition on this. The Talmud has a question. Does a Talmud Chochem have to have Hasaror warning or not? He knows the law. Do you have to really warn him? So one opinion is a Talmud Chochem doesn't have to be warned. Why? Because the whole idea of warning is to differentiate between knowledge and lack of knowledge. If you warn him, he knows. This Talmud Chacham surely knows the law. There is no need to warn him. The other opinion says, doesn't matter, you still have to warn him. Maimonides, the Rambam, when he brings down the, calls out the detail of the halacha, so he says that a Talmud Chacham needs warning. But he quotes the reason of the other opinion. He says, because warning was made to differentiate between knowledge and accidental or lack of knowledge. So everybody questions the Rambam. How could he use the contrary opinion to say this way? The opinion that you need warning to differentiate was used in the Talmud to say that the scholar does not require warning because he knows the law. Yet the Rambam brings down that he does require warning, and he gives us this reason. So my Rebbe Zichron Livracha said from his father, I mean, there's a very deep idea here that the concept of violating, the Rambam teaches, the concept of violating a malacha, which is a malacha deraisa, which the person has to bear the full brunt of punishment, is if he does it with his entire knowledge and his up-to-the-moment action. That means that I am 100% aware of this. It hasn't been tempered and it hasn't been dimmed in my memory. I am 100% alive and vibrating and aware of this halacha, and I still do it. That's responsible. A Talmud Chacham may have learned it, we'll say. But it's in the back of his mind and he knows it. But there's a big difference if somebody is standing over him and tells him, if you do this, you're going to be responsible for death. It takes the knowledge, the abstract, and it brings it into a reality. And in order to give someone the death penalty, it's necessary to have an absolute reality. So that's what the Rambam seems to apply, that a Talmud Chacham even. In order to that, he has to have the absolute reality. Anything under that is considered a lack of recognition. That's a certain degree of shogeg. But here we're speaking that it was totally shogeg. The person forgot. He didn't know it was Shabbos. He has to bring a korban. Now what happens? He forgot that it was Shabbos. In the meantime, he went out and he cut the grass, and he smoked a cigarette, and he planted some more seeds, and then he watered the seeds, and he gathered together into a grass bag, and then, oy vey, it's Shabbos. So I mean, how many korbanos does he have to bring? Does he have to bring one korban, or does he have to bring many korbanos? How many would you say he has to bring? So this law, by differentiating and taking one malacha out of the category, teaches us the following, that chiluk malachos b'shabbos, that means if he did it b'shogeg, he would have to bring a number of sacrifices. That means that if he desecrated Shabbat by doing various malacha, each malacha is considered a separate desecration of Shabbat and has to be atoned for separately. And the gravity of the offense is driven home by one's mind by the separate chatas. For example, if someone, like I said, had plowed, sown, and cut corn in Shabbat, he has to bring a chatas for each malacha, for each category. So he could end up bringing who knows how many. If a whole day he forgot it was Shabbos, he could end up bringing or being obligated to bring many, many sacrifices. Now, we won't go into the philosophical reason, but that is the idea of lo sivaru eish, according to the halacha. There is a midrashic or interpretation why lo sivaru eish was taken out of context. Because everything was created in the 6 days. God created the entire world and everything in the 6 days. We make Havdalah Shabbos night. Why do we use fire that we make Havdalah on Shabbos night? Shabbos night we make Havdalah to commemorate the creation of fire. Because fire was created Mitzoy Shabbos, after Shabbos. So according to that, person perhaps would think that fire is not a violation of Shabbos, because Shabbos only recognizes the creativity of God in the 6 days of creation. Now, fire wasn't created during the 6 days, so maybe fire would not be included in the malach of Shabbos. So therefore, so I think said in the name of Rav Zalman Sirotskin, therefore the interpretation is, le sivaru eish b'chol moshvaseichem, B'yom HaShabbos, to tell you that that's also considered to be forbidden. Then after the idea of Shabbos, this is without going into the concept of Shabbos, we find a further commandment in sentence 4, V'yomer Moshe al kol adaz b'nei Yisrael, zeh adovor, like we just quoted the word zeh, kechu me'itchem, take from these people. Now take seems to be an expression, forcibly. Then it says, Trumo Lashem, let's see every word, Kol Nediv Libo, every person, Nediv Libo, who goes ahead and offers his spirit, urged on by his spirit, should bring the Truma to God, Zohar V'chesef U'nechoshes, gold and silver. Now, the idea, if we had to stop on the structure of the Pasuk, we would ask, Kru, the Lashon Kechu always means like forcibly, take. If it's Nediv Libo, Yevieho, if a person brings it out of Nedivus Halev, so what is the idea of Kechu, of take? So some of the commentaries will see stop in this. There's also, if you look further in verse 21, when it repeats this idea there, it says, Vayavo kol ish asher neso libo, each person whose heart stirred him up, v'chol asher nodvo rucho oso, and everyone whose spirit urged him, v'viyu es trumas Hashem, brought the truma of God for the melacha, for the necessary work that had to be done in the Ohel Moed, and for all the Avodah, and for the Big Day Kodesh. Here we're introducing a different word. We're introducing Nodvar Rucho, and previous in 5 it said Nediv Libo. Here we're also saying Neso Libo. So what are these various phrases or terms used? Here it says Neso Libo, every man, like her says, whose heart stirred him up. And Nediv Libo means that his heart urged him. There's a difference if your heart stirs you or your heart urges you, right? Or here it says his spirit urged him. What is the significance of the language, of the changes of the language that take place? So the first is that the Ramban notes this, and the Ramban, and the passage of Chumi Itchom on sentence 4 says what seemed to be obligation. So he says this Parsha is speaking about Nedava. It's speaking here not about the obligatory offering that they had to bring. If you remember, we spoke about last week and the previous week, there were three different Trumos, three different offerings. One had to be the half shekel. One offering was as much as the person felt inspired, right, or desired to give. So the Ramban says that in this chapter, when we use the expression truma and we speak of all the materials, we're speaking about the materials that were a voluntary offering that he found within himself an inspiration. So therefore, the pasuk, he says, kol nediv libo yevieo es trumas Hashem. That if a person gives the Nediv Halev, if a person offers his heart to God, Yevieho, it'll bring back as Trumas Hashem. That means God will give us back that which we give him. So the Truma Milamailo comes because of this Truma, because of what we give, that in a sense will go ahead and bring back Hashem. What is the idea of Truma? Truma means that we separate and we have an offering to God. The Gemara describes in Brachas that it's as if HaKadosh Baruch Hu wears tefillin. And it says, what is written in the tefillin of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? So it's written in his tefillin, Mikei Amcho Yisrael, Geyachot Baruch. So really, the Truma, the separation, if I be to you to a God, you will be to me for a nation. That is a two-way truma. In a sense, we are also considered truma, just like we give truma to the Rebbeinu Shalela. So, chumi item truma l'Hashem, kol nediv libo. What will bring about the response, he would say, kol nediv libo. The lave that the person gives, that will bring about the truma Hashem. So this is one way that he interprets it. And later the Torah says, the second sentence which we quoted, that's how he says, Kru Mi Yitrom, take from them, meaning the general idea of take. Maybe the Gabbai had to urge him, but Nadiv Libo, if they give with their own, Yevieo es Trumas Hashem, that will bring the response. Now in sentence 21 he says that there were two ideas. People came also. Nesol Libo means that a person came to offer himself. Nadiv Libo of sentence 21 means that he gave a special gift, a monetary material gift. Nesol Libo means that the person came inspired. He would like to volunteer. He would like to do something for the work, to be able to work in the Mishkan. So how did that work? So Hashem told Moshe, fine. After all of these people got together, we didn't know who had skills and who didn't have skills. So he said all of these people would be given over, as we'll see shortly, to Bezalel and to Aliyah. And Bezalel and Aliyah would be the ones that teach those who brought themselves as offerings. And the Saul Libo would mean the person whose heart stirred him, according to the Ramban, that he should participate physically, and Nodvar Rucho, meaning that he gave his donation. All of these got together, and Moshe gave them over later to Bezalel and to the other who was supposed to be the leaders of the construction, and they picked out the people of Nesol Liboy that were actually able to participate. They picked out these people. All right, fine. Now, the people that brought it, that's one interpretation of the double language. There are two others that I think are worth mentioning. The Kli Yochor explains that the double language is Chumi Itchem, meaning the Truma that had to be obligatory. Chumi Itchem, the half a shekel, they had no choice. The rest of Nadiv Libo goes on the other amount that was a donation of their own spirit, because we said there were various trumos. So the truma that was obligatory, that's chumi itom, you take it forcibly. The other trumos that each one donated, that's the idea of nativ libo. Now, other commentaries see on the dual language of nesol libo and nidvas rucho, they say that there are two types of donations that are given. Sometimes a person's entire soul and body, and the higher soul, the lower soul, are just dying away, actually, waiting for the opportunity to give charity. That means that they heard the call, and the person is enamored, and there is no conflict within him what to give, how to give. He just opens himself up in his entire spirit. That's Nesol Libo. It's like flying. The whole person, with his physical, spiritual, emotional, everything is totally unified. There are no conflicts going on in him. That's the idea of Nesol Libo. Then there is another person, it says, Kol Asher Nodvar Rucho. Now, the first person is extolled, Kol Ish. Ish is more of a stronger appellation that you give him, as a person of significance, Ish, who was Nesol Libo. And also one who had a little bit of a conflict within him, and the Ruach is the higher spirit, was able to overpower the lower spirit in the sense that didn't want to give. So that's the idea of Nodvar Rucho. Nodvar Rucho means the higher spirit urged him to give. So that person also brought. So why does he differentiate? Because the purpose, we said, of the Mishkan really was the spirit, like we spoke out a few weeks ago. It wasn't the physical aspect of it. We said you have to build a Mishkan with your spirit, so the spirit of God will dwell. So the spirit here, people brought. How did they know what they brought? But Hashem knew what they brought. And there were two categories, even in the generosity of their giving. Some were Nesol Libay, and some were Nodvar Ruchay. And the Rabbeinu Shlomo was able to see. The Rabbeinu Shlomo knows the inner workings of a person's heart, so he knew who it was in the soul, Libe and Nodvar Ruche. They didn't have to force him. Outwardly, it would seem that they both have the same degree of generosity. You make an appeal and two people respond, even with the same money. the person making the appeal doesn't know what went on in the mind of one person and what went on in the mind of the other. But it's self-evident that some people didn't even have to think twice. As soon as they heard, they immediately. Some had to grapple a little bit with their conscience and with their spirit, and then finally they also gave. That's the difference from the saw, libe, to notva ruche. The importance of it is because the entire Mishkan, it's even more important, we'll say, than the physical properties. It enumerates the physical properties that they gave, like in the next sentence and further on. But here it wants to enumerate the spiritual properties, really the spiritual contributions, because basically the Mishkan was a spiritual contribution, and therefore it differentiates. It finds it significant to differentiate between the two aspects of the spiritual contribution. Another thing that we see immediately in the next sentence is an interesting sentence, which is also oft quoted. It says, Vayavo, in sentence 22, if you look for a moment, Vayavohu ha'anoshim al ha'anoshim, kol nedivlei heviyu. The men came alongside the women. Every person, urged by his spirit, brought chof, nezem, tabaz, v'chumos. These are various jewelries, all types of silver and gold, and every person brought etnufa zov l'ashem, gold to God. Now, by a person, it says the idea of tnufazov, by a woman, the gold that she had may have been worked out into various items of jewelry. If you notice, choch and nezem tabaz v'chumoz, klizohov, correct? Klizohov. Look at the text. When it speaks of the women, it says, kol nedivlei v'viu choch nezem tabaz v'chumoz. These are all the nose rings, rings, and buckles. Kol klizohov, golden objects. Then it says, v'chol ish asher heinif, Tnufa Zov Lashem, and every man that brought a Tnufa Zov. Because basically by the man, some point out, the idea was that it was solid gold. It wasn't an item of jewelry, because they just used the gold for the wealth of it, whereas the women use it to make Klizov out of it. But whatever you see here, it seems that the women had a very strong part in the offerings that were brought. Now, if you notice, it says in 23 that everybody brought along the various linens and purple and goat's hair, etc. It says in 24, V'chol meirim, also everyone who made an offering of silver and copper. Because up to now you were speaking about gold in 22, and beautiful tapestries in 23, silver and copper, and it says, V'chol asher nimso ito atzei shitim, l'chol melachas aveda heviyu. Somehow it seems that the atzei shitim seem to merit a special emphasis. It doesn't include it along with the gold and the silver, but it merits a special emphasis. What significance, why does the Atzei Shitim merit this emphasis? So they point out a very interesting reason. Ben Ish Chai says, because the Medrash told us, remember, how did they get the Atzei Shitim in the Midbar? Yaakov Avinu brought them down and planted them for that reason. Now, the people, when they left, they cut out the Atzei Shitim and they had to schlep the Atzei Shitim. Now, if you were carrying a little piece of gold worth a fortune, more than the wood, or you were carrying the expensive wood, if you need the wood, no gold will fill the wood. They're going to stop making certain kind of rockers because this famous rocker is going to be out. They can't find the proper wood. Wood is a very important thing. So now the people that had to schlep the wood along, they deserved a little more scar. Because you go carry a telephone pole with you or carry a gold watch. It's a lot easier to carry a gold watch. So therefore it emphasizes, V'chol ish asher nimtzo ito atzei shitim. The person that happened to have atzei shitim. Atzei shitim itself is worth mentioning. And then it mentions, V'chol isho chachma slave. And all the women, biyodeo tovu, they spin with their own hands. And they already spun these various materials. And then it says further, V'chol anoshim in 26, asher noso libon osono, asher noso libon osono, b'chokhma tovu esayizim. The emphasis here is, 25 is speaking about a woman who was wise-hearted and sat home and spinned everything and brought it. 26 is speaking about a woman that went out Tovu eso izim, and they had to make goat skin, goat hair. She didn't cut off the hair first, but they had a special chokhmah. that they made it on the goat. Talmud says, Tovu Esa'izim, that they actually made it on the goat. Here, the V'chochmeh is added as a qualification of Nosol Libon. So since it says Nosol Libon B'chochmeh, it can't refer to their skill, but characterizes the decision to which their hearts directed them. While the other skilled women rushed to work the beautiful materials required, but these, their wiser sisters, chose to make the more modest material for the goat's hair covering. So Hirsch says that they chose to make the most modest material. So he emphasizes the difference in 25 to 26. The 25 wanted to make those beautiful colored curtains we should have brought this week. I had intended to bring those pictures. I'm going to bring it next week. It's just beyond comprehension how beautiful. I don't know if you noticed those. You may have noticed that before. I didn't. Today I was learning and I happened to look at it and I saw. But the idea of B'chochmah is added here. What does he say, B'chochmah? These women, Asher Noso Libon B'chochmah, Hirsch says the word B'chochmah is added, not to the skill, because Noso Libon would be the skill, Hirsch says. B'chochmah means they went beyond the skill. They chose to make the more modest material for the goat's hair covering. Why? So he says, this, after all, was the essential part which held the whole thing together. The goat's, the covering really was the main part. It was the real actual ohel. This was the main covering over it. So Hirsch emphasizes the making of an ohel is where the quintessence of womanhood is concentrated. So that in this they displayed careful thought and their sense of true womanhood, their chochmah. That's why the Gemara says the method by which these women spun the goat's hair as an unusual an exceptionally skillful one, and they flooded away the hair from the skin of the goats and spun directly from the bodies of the goats. Now, the idea was this was a painless separation from the hair. So, both aspects, but I'm saying in addition to what Hirsch emphasizes, chochmah, that they understood that the woman has to do the job, we'll say, which may be covered over by a beautiful cover on top and a beautiful cover on bottom, with gold and so on, but this was mere goat's hair. But this was between those two covers, and this kept, this was the main cover of the ohel. So he said they understood to pick that which was most significant, even if it wasn't so obvious, and they wouldn't get all the credit. Then they didn't get the credit for the beautiful tapestry that they did, although they showed such wisdom that they even went ahead, and they did it on the goat. Now, what is the significance of doing it on the goat? One would think that doing it off of the goat would be the same thing. A goat's hair is a goat's hair. The difference is, that I would say, is enveloped in the word nosol libon. What did I say nosol libon means? You can't wait, right? You're flying. Your spirit lifts you up and you fly. They didn't wait to go and get a goat and cut off the hair and so on. On the goat itself, they already did the sewing. That's why it says Nosol Libon, you understand? Nosol means it picked it up and brought them. Not Not Varucham, there was the material here and they went ahead and did it. That was fine. But in 26, it shows you even a greater degree that the women emphasized that Not Varucham. So you see here that the Torah extols the virtues of the women in three psukim, and it's important because each one has a lesson. 25 and 26, what we just spoke about. And also, Vayaveyu Anoshim Al Anoshim. On that passage that the men came by the women, so the Chazal tell us that the people were Nitfalu. The Ramban brings down that the men were secondary after their wives. The women immediately took off their jewelry, and afterwards, like it says in the sentence, and afterwards the men brought their gold. But the first part, it says, the women took off their jewelry and everything. When the men saw that the women took off the jewelry, they took off the gold. Now, the Taskenim Balatesvah says that, and also we find in the Chazal, that the women were Zeichet to Simchas Rish Chedesh, not doing work, and Rish Chedesh had a unique position that this was a gift to the women. Why? Because they didn't give to the Egel, they did not give their jewelry. They didn't give Nizmeyan. And the Tastasis is even Masif, the fact that they didn't give to the Egel, but they did give to the Mishkan. But they gave Besimcha with great enthusiasm. They were the first ones. So the fact that they gave with great enthusiasm, because you could say, like Rashi says before, that the fact is that they didn't give before, we'll say, and now they won't give. But now begrudgingly they'll give. They don't want to give up their jewelry. So it says, no, now they gave with great enthusiasm. There's a famous interpretation of Rabbeinu Bechaya. Shlomo HaMelech says, Odom echad me'elef metzosi. I found one man from 1,000. Ve'isha b'chol eile loy metzosi. In the second phrase, isha b'chol eile loy metzosi. I didn't find a woman amongst these 1,000. So there are all different ways to interpret that passage. Some say one person, but not even a woman. I mean, just a man. But Rabbeinu Bechaya says a different, he says, Isha b'chol eile refers to the Eile l'hecha Yisrael. Eile l'hecha Yisrael. There were a number of Jewish men that they found there, but Isha b'chol eile, amongst all of those people that said Eile l'hecha Yisrael, you didn't find in a woman. B'chol eile mitzavsi, meaning that the women did not make the egel. They would not give their properties to the Egel. They did go along with that, but they didn't give their properties to the Egel. Now, a reason given for that is a very interesting reason. Rabbeinu Bechaya says, from here we learn out, and people, modern-day women, would look at it, and they would think that, derogatory, of course, speaking down to the women. But Rabbeinu Bechaya says that from the idea of the women doing these things, it shows us what the importance of the woman is, by Zrizut Sorche Beisa Uchveit Baila. In a sense, what Hirsch says, much later, Rabbeinu Bechaya was the earliest, that the woman's Zrizut was to make sure that there's a roof over the head, like Hirsch said. She didn't go for the ostentatious display. The main thing was to see that the house should be held together. And this, he says, the Torah gives as the woman's contribution. He says, and that's why they said that women do not have to learn Torah. There's no mitzvah lamed Torah lebonos, because the women have within themselves the netiyah. They have within themselves the direction where they could understand the significance and importance of keeping a house together. And they also want to answer a very good idea, because, and so true, he wants to say, why didn't the women do the egel? Because how did the men get brought into the egel? How were they attracted? He started saying, well, we're really not making an egel. We're making a form like we spoke, like Moshe, and so on. But God said not. Yeah, but God said not to make an idol, but this isn't an idol. This is a form like Moshe. So, mit den globen fingers. The women don't go for the globen finger. They felt from their spirit that they can't understand these heterim. There's no heterim. It says you're not supposed to make an idol. This is an idol. You understand? They didn't have the... So he rewards it very nicely. He says, perhaps because they didn't learn Torah, so they don't look for a heterim. And they do, and they don't go from the derech of Torah, which is almost like a natural direction to them, which is to guard the family, to guard the ohel, to guard the house. This is just a certain kind of an observation which they speak about in the women's contribution. Then it says the princes brought the Shoim stones and the stones to be brought. After everybody brought everything, in 27 and 28, it gives you the items that the princes brought. But it's of interest, the Chazal point out, the Medrash points out, that the word Nesiim here is normally spelled with the Yud. It should be spelled with the Yud. Here it's Chosar, instead of two Yuds actually. Here you don't have a Yud in the Nesiim. It's Nun Sin Aleph Mem. It's always spelled with Yuds. Why over here is it Chosar? Because they said to themselves, let everybody else bring, and we'll figure out at the end what's missing, we'll bring. But they didn't figure that everybody's going to bring. So instead of being the leaders in showing, they thought, well, nobody will bring and we'll bring. The Nasi is not supposed to be the follow-up. The Nasi is supposed to be the leader. So the fact that they didn't really fulfill that aspect of their position, the Torah wants them forever to remember that. And therefore it says, Vanasiim without a Yud. That's what the Medrash says. That's why the Yud is taken away. Then sentence 30, Moshe says, Reu Korah Hashem b'shem b'tzalo ben Uri ben Chur l'mate Yehuda. And he gave him the Spirit of God, Chochma, Tfuna, and it's 32, Lachshov, to combine ideas, and also cutting of stones for setting. He has all of these gifts. And then in 34, it says, L'horos nosam b'libo, the gift of teaching he has put in his heart, both he and Aliyah. he and Aliyov of the tribe of Dan. Here he puts in also he and Aliyov, the tribe of Dan, that he has filled them with wisdom of heart to do all the manners. And then in 36:1, if you notice, it says, Bezalel and Aliyov and each Chacham lay. Now, Heres Nosam Belibo seems to be a stop right after Belibo. And then it says, he and Aliyov, and they have the wisdom, and they choose the people, and they supervise. So we have two great people. Yet Bezalel seems to be extolled more than Aliyov. First, God says, Reu, see, I have called Bezalel ben Uri ben Chur. What is the expression of see? And secondly, why does he have to repeat all of this? He repeats all of this earlier. There's one extra lesson that he repeats here. And that's the lesson, I just want to make sure we got time to emphasize that. That's the lesson in sentence 34, where it says, Lahoros nosan belibo, all right? Lahoros nosan belibo. He gave him the ability to teach. The Chassam Sefer points out that there's an additional segula, there's an additional uniqueness that one person can have over another in their outstanding virtues. There is a person who has a tremendous amount of wisdom and knowledge and understanding, but he can't teach anybody. He just doesn't have the ability to present this information and to teach. This ability to teach is a special kishrin, the Chassam Sefer points out, and a special ability. That means just because a person knows a lot doesn't mean he could be a teacher. To be able to transfer and transmit a special gift. This is the gift where it says, Ulhoros nosan belibo. God gave Bezalel the additional gift of Lahoros. If you notice, the belibo means stop, it's nachto. Then it says, he and Aliyov, God has given them wisdom. So it seems the capacity to teach is basically Bezalel. Aliyov also had really the wisdom, but Bezalel also had Lahoros, had this capacity. Now, it seems that Bezalel's gift came from God. Vayimaleo, so, in sentence 31, it says, I gave him Ruach Elokim. Aliyov's gift seemed to be that it was a natural thing. So some commentaries want to say that there was a difference from Bezalel to Aliyah, that Bezalel had this outstanding wisdom, but only till the Mishkan was finished. Aliyah had this wisdom of his own. And we could really appreciate it. They go into it in great detail. Because how did you have this wisdom in Mitzrayim? I mean, how could people, and even if you have one, but I mean, how do you get two? So that's why they said, Taket, Rambam points out, it's a direct gift of God, that God has given Bezalel. And in fact, they say, look at, what is the expression see? What does the expression see mean? So the Ramban says, like this is see, you know, he's follows, that the person is amazed and he's wondering, he's aghast at the that somebody should possess this ability, he said. Look, this Kishran unfolds itself from a nation that nobody, Yisrael, Mitzrayim, they were working out in the fields or whatever. Their hands weren't attuned to be able to be that agile and that to work with fragile things and with wisdom and dexterity. How does he have this? See, the Hispilus. The idea was that Hashem gave it to him. That is the idea of see. Others say, Re'e Karossi, see, I have appointed that the second shot, the Abarbanel says, what really, he had this a long time. It wasn't a direct gift God gave him now. But people will say, why are you giving it to Bezalel? Give it to somebody else. So God says to Moshe before, and Moshe says, see, I want Bezalel to do it. Not the expression of see as a amazement, response of amazement, but the idea of see as a commandment. I just want to point out, they go into the Chochma, Tfuna, Das, Lasos. There are two different things, and this is so true. In Chochma and Tfuna and Das means intelligence and wisdom. But there's also Lasos. Bezalel had both. And they bring down here that the Ibn Ezra, I think, speaks on this. Brings down the words from a philosopher. He says, anybody who Hashem has given a lot of seichel, sometimes, so true, kotzer be keach agashmi, he's usually lacking in the physical ability to knock a nail into the wall. And there he says, Mipnei zeh, and listen to the word, the philosopher says, Rov ha-chachomim, the majority of chachomim, of wise people, yedeyem v'ragleyem kvedus, their hands and their feet are heavy. English would mean they're all thumbs. Balei umnes sheheim kalim, they're not balei umnes who are agile and have seichel, how to figure out to do something. It seems the abstract is something else than the practical. So these people, this was the great gift that God had given them, not only the abstract wisdom, the spiritual wisdom, as we spoke last week, but also the practicality of it. You'll tell somebody how to do it. Here's a hammer and nail, show me. The idea is they were also able to physically, materially, show them how the work should be done. Okay.